I forgot about that.
Did I remember?
Is this your first time?
Bro, do you even podcast?
All right, that's a good intro.
No, every damn time. You every damn time.
I just wait time. Until you say something stupid. And then we'll
so you basically just wait.
Pretty much. I was going to say, where are we? Because that's not a natural place to start, except the view is obscured by so many things.
All these metals.
What's going on?
Oh, multi-award winning bloggers and...
Yeah, I know. Well, it's okay, amazing. So we got to do both, actually. Like, let's do the view, which is... in Oslo. Oh man, that's like super super overexposed, but that's okay. It's Oslo, it's sunny, it's warm, and we're drinking beer, which is good. Everyone's happy
drinking Carlsberg.
Well, it's Carlsberg. We couldn't find beer, so we got Carlsberg. So okay, the trophy stuff. Like, we gotta go through a heap of stuff today. We went to go outside and get a nice scenery, and then it was windy, and then someone was trying to
sell us drugs.
I don't know if that's true. We just said no to everything.
Yeah. Whatever the question was, the answer was no.
They could have been trying to sell some decent beer and we just passed up on them. We'll fix that later. Okay, so jumping into it, like, we have had just an
crazy.
What kind of week is it? It's just insane. Nuts.
Yeah.
But it has been like the most epic week ever. And we should actually straighten the camera. It's my first time. Let's maybe do it chronologically, because I'm sure people watching this have like seen tweets and Facebook posts and things like this, and of course we both blogged about all this.
Yep.
But I flew over to London. I think I got to the hotel at 2 o'clock or something on Tuesday, got a couple of hours sleep, and then we met you and your wife at the hotel, and we all looked like really unusually presentable.
We did. I actually bought the suit for the thing because I literally didn't have
really
one. So that's how unpresentable.
I thought it was just me who had to buy clothes.
Oh yeah, it was literally like I purchased it for the event.
Okay. So we were going to the SC Awards event, and this was, well, actually you tell the story because you were sort of more involved with Report Your Eyes. So what was the SC Award?
Well, yeah, so I mean, we have
the event, because we've got to do a chronology, don't tell
us. Okay, yeah. So the SC Awards are run by SC Magazine here in Europe, and so it's not like a public vote or anything, it's actually a panel. So the panel chooses the kind of shortlisted finalists, and then they all get invited to the awards ceremony. So we were shortlisted as a finalist for Best Emerging Technology with Report URI. We then got an invite to go to the awards ceremony.
And this just kind of timed out well, insofar as I was going to be in London anyway for InfoSec EU. I'm going to talk about that later on too. And we sort of went along to this, and then I think we kind of realized later on that the EU Blogger Awards were on.
Exactly the same time.
You are an EU blogger.
Yes.
I'm a blogger in the EU.
You're in the EU.
Maybe that helps.
Maybe it's because your internet site is, you know, it's like the internet is in the EU as well.
I don't care, because we both got nominated. Mm-hmm. What was your nomination for?
Most educational blog.
What was mine? Because it was actually kind of a funky name.
Yours is the Grand Prix Overall Security Blog.
What was it?
I think Grand Prix Overall Security.
No, I just wanted to hear you say it again. It does.
Oh, it was my little boy mispronounced it. It's Grand Prix, but...
which is not too inaccurate either. Grand Prix prize for the best overall security blog. So we were both nominated, and a bunch of our friends were nominated for different things as well, which was cool. And we kind of had a moment where we're like, I wonder if we can, in our suits and ties and things, which would have been out of place, go to the blogger thing and then get back to SC Mag. But it was just...
It was too tight.
So we went to the SC Awards, and we're standing around drinking the welcome champagne, I think, at the time. And then your phone's gone off because you've won the award, which was awesome. So that would be the first one in the series.
That's
here.
This one over here.
out of one. And then the other one was mine came up. So I was really stoked about that as well. And to be fair as well, like, when you look at the categories we're nominated in, even for the other big one we'll talk about in a moment, like, there are really, really good people in there, like people that you and I know and respect as well.
And that's the kind of thing, right? We're amongst really good company, and I think that makes it more of a success as well.
And I sort of think, by the same token, if we didn't get it, you would have looked at the person who got it and went, yeah, you know, they're doing a good job. So anyway, that was cool. And then we were pretty stoked about that, because we were like, okay, cool. Well, now we actually get to go home with something, because
we didn't get all dressed up for nothing.
We didn't, well, for a different thing, but we didn't expect to win anything else. So then we go to this dinner, it is all very formal. There's a lot of people in tuxedos, which I think was a bit of a stretch for both you and I.
Yeah, no, we did suits.
Which was still a bit of a stretch. And then, you know, they actually did the awards quite late. I think it was like 8:30. Or was it even like 10:30? It was late.
No, it was definitely late because it was after we'd eaten everything. Yeah. It was after we'd eaten as well.
So we had dinner. Maybe they just wait for people to get happier. Something like that.
I'll just say it.
maybe better able to deal with either the disappointment or it sort of amplifies the elation.
Yeah.
And fortunately, we were the latter. So they're calling out this category for the best emerging technology. And yeah, when you look at who we're up against, it was companies with a lot of money and a lot of people,
yeah,
and a lot of experience. And Report Your Eye is basically you 3 years ago going, oh, I got a good idea, and then in November going, oh, I will help you out with that a little bit, you know, we'll see what happens. So we never expect it, which is why we're kind of happy about the outer awards, because it's like, well, at least we get something now. And that it was, I really should have filmed it because it would have been just epic. But I didn't know we were going to get the thing, so I didn't film it. But when they sort of read out the nominations, and then there's like a highly commended, right?
Yeah.
And I remember both you and I saying, because someone got the highly commended, we're like, oh man, we're not going to get anything now. And then they start going, and the winner is, I forget the way they put it, was like, but web-based platform technology. And they were going, holy shit, we do web-based platform yeah. technology stuff.
Who's ripped off our idea?
I know, who are these people? And yeah, then getting that, and you went up and shook hands and got the thing, and I got that photo of you walking back, which I put on the blog post I wrote earlier today. And it's just, you're just looking going, like, what just happened?
What? You know? Literally, it was all I was thinking.
How was it going up on the stage, though? Was it, like, super weird? Because it must have been...
Oh,
I mean, many hundreds of people at least in the room, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. And it was like formal dinner tables, like, you know, way back in this big hall. And it was just, I still don't kind of know really what happened, because I was like, you know, you go up there, you shake the hands, you get this award and the photographers and stuff. And I was like, no way, I don't understand what is happening. Yeah. And I still don't really. It's still just really bizarre for me. But
so, because of that, we drank a lot of champagne. And I think we got to about 1:30 or something in the morning, and you came back with another bottle of increasingly good champagne, which incidentally is the wrong way to do this, folks. Like, start with the good stuff, and then by the time you get to the crap stuff, no one cares anyway. I seem to recall seeing the bottle unopened and suggesting that may be a good state to leave it in, because we did both have to talk the next day.
Yeah.
So anyway, look, that was, it is a little bit hard to put into words, but it was just a crazy experience, wasn't it? And it's certainly not something I've had the pleasure of receiving before, at least not in that context. And incidentally, like, this award, this is solid.
It
is crazy. It is so heavy. And it was kind of fun watching you figure out how you're going to deal with your lightweight.
Incidentally, luggage. They don't let you through airports with things like this.
Yeah, don't try and take solid blocks of steel through through the security terminals. We did realize that before trying. This is not said from experience. It is just speculation, which I think would be quite reliable. So, anyway, you know, moving on. And look, really, most of this update today is just talking about stuff we've been doing during the week. There are a few little tech things. But obviously, we were there for the InfoSec event. So that is, if anyone's been to RSA before, for me, it was a little bit like a mini RSA, where there's like halls just chock full of vendors, and everyone's got a cyber thing, right?
Yeah. Next gen.
What were some of the things you saw that was like a little bit cybery? Maybe without throwing anyone under the bus.
Yeah, I was trying to do this diplomatically.
In fairness, some of it was kind of fun as well. Some of it was kind of cool.
Everything's next gen. I don't know if you picked up on that, but every time I looked at something, it was like next generation and AI as well.
Oh yeah,
everything's AI, next gen AI,
blockchain,
ML. I don't know. I go to InfoSec because all the right kind of people are there, and we did walk the vendor floor in the afternoon on Wednesday just to kind of have a look around. But I get the feeling that it's a bit kind of too salesy for me.
It did feel very salesy, to be honest, because you haven't been to RSA before, have you?
No.
No, that's like you do that once in your life, you know, that sort of thing. But there are lots of vendors pitching, and that's, I guess, kind of an interesting. Yeah, this is just the way that the business is, I guess.
There's nothing wrong with that. It's just not my kind of conference or event, really.
I think we kind of felt, I don't know what the right word is. Maybe a little bit proud that we were walking around with this. And incidentally, we were walking around with this.
You were walking around with this.
Well, you're taking it home.
Trey was actually walking around like this.
being the founder of Report URI, you are taking that one home. So I needed to have my moment of fame with it. So walking around with it, which was kind of fun. But yeah, just like really elaborate stands, a lot of them, some of them, you know, there'd be like a magician at one of them, for example, and another one serving popcorn and things that are just sort of there to draw people in.
The coffee one was good. That was the best coffee there.
Yeah, so Blackberry actually. So Blackberry had coffee. I'm not sure what else Blackberry was doing, but the coffee was very good.
And this is kind of what we came away with, right? It's like they had good popcorn. These guys had great coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not sure that's what they were going for.
There was... a lot of the stands have like mini presentations too, like the bigger ones. I imagine this is related to the spend. And incidentally, a lot of these vendors would have spent many hundreds of thousands of pounds to have that little space on the floor for a couple of days. But I remember you and I were, I can't remember who the vendor was in all honesty, but you and I were looking at one of them and the guy's doing a pitch and there's seating for, I don't know, like 20 people or something like that. And there's no one there. And we're both looking at him going,
I don't understand.
Are you still talking? What are you pitching? But this is it almost felt like this is the machine of InfoSec, right? You go there and you present things and there's a schedule and you're going to talk about stuff. And it felt a bit awkward.
That was a bit odd, yeah. And, you know, literally walking through and it's like there's all the little seating pods. This guy's just talking through a product. Yeah.
We were watching, but not because of the content.
From afar. Yeah, we were interested in the concept of what was happening, not the product pitch.
So speaking of stands and vendors, I was over there for Varonis. So Varonis actually asked me to come over and do the talk for them. And I've done a bunch of stuff with Varonis in the past, and they're one of the companies that I think you would agree, it was not like super pitchy or sleazy or any of these other things that some of them were. So they are all very, very nice, down to earth. So I actually did a talk at their stand sometime in that morning, whilst we're still recovering, incidentally. So I did talk about passwords and authentication, etc. And I did actually have a really good crowd as well, which was nice.
I wasn't there. I can't verify that.
Well, actually, you were doing your other thing. So what are you talking about? Oh, you should have brought the device. Maybe we'll do that next week.
Yeah, we'll do it next week. Because I will have it in Norway. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, we're in Norway.
We're already in Norway.
Oh, man. It's been such a long week. We'll have it next week in Norway from Oslo.
We did also only get off the plane about an hour or two ago as well. So anyhow, talk about your talk, because your talk was enormously well attended and it was fun, just given the background.
So yeah, just over a year ago I did the Nomex protocol research, and the BBC did a whole TV episode about this. I published it. And
pray tell, what is Nomex?
So this company built this little black box, and it's literally like a small black box. You install it in your house and it gives you secure communications. It's the world's most secure communications protocol. It provides absolute security, absolute privacy, and to date, including the press statement they released on the day of my talk, no one has ever been hacked that uses one.
Does anyone actually have one? Could that possibly be?
Well, one? I have one, and I've been hacked. So,
well, but by yourself.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it doesn't
say. There could be some truth in it. It's like, hey, we've never sold one, never got hacked.
Maybe that's anyway, what they're going
speculating,
for.
Speculating.
So, anyway, they. I did this thing over a year ago, and I was on Geek Street at InfoSec, and they said, look,
is basically like a presentation area.
It's like a specialized stage where it was obviously going to be quite technical or, you know, slightly deeper talks. And they said, look, you know, we're looking for a lot of kind of red team stuff or stories about hacking or research. And I was like, hey, I did this thing a year ago now, so maybe we could do like Nomex a year on, what's changed. So I went through the research that we did and showed, you know, we had like full BBC film crews in the room watching us test this device and stuff.
A year ago.
And yeah, so a year on, I was like, we'll do a recap. I'll tell the story, what happened, and kind of like, how do we avoid this happening, right? And some of the questions I left with at the end were around, how do we fix this? Yeah. Is the answer regulation? So a few of the journalists interviewed me like the week before, so they can publish stories on the day, like right after talks. They do like a pre-interview kind of thing. And they said, we're going to give the company their fair representation, send them some questions and get them to respond. Yep. And the company released a press statement onto their website the morning of my talk to preempt my talk.
Now, can I read this? I'll just read a part
you
of
got
this,
it.
This
okay.
press statement. Because it is kind of awesome. So, Nomex responds to regurgitated year-old false claims by a UK blogger. Now, that is a lot of things to explain in one go. Regurgitated, well, okay, was something has been said before, I'll give them that, year old. Now, the false claims in the UK blogger, so I see a lot of UK blogger, like they never say Scott.
No.
And they never say security professional.
Or professional, yeah. Or anything. I think, so I really got the feeling, because they did that in the very first press statement back then, I kind of got the feeling that it's almost like they intend it as a derogatory term.
Yeah.
And it's like, he's just a blogger. And I'm like, dude, I'm okay. Like, I multi-award winning blogger.
we'll get to that now.
But yeah, it's like.
Let me just read the first paragraph because I mean, this just beggars belief. In 2017, a UK-based blogger claimed he could easily and quickly hack a Nomix device. Nomix is always in bold too. Why is it always in bold?
It's like power.
Okay, gotcha. sounds reasonable. The BBC, Nomix, and other media requested a demonstration of this allegation, and the blogger failed to do so publicly. The blogger continues to make these claims from the comfort of the UK, where is safe from the American legal system.
right.
How do you respond to that, blogger? UK blogger?
So, I mean, it's just crazy, right? We have this... it's a thinly veiled legal threat, I guess. And it's like, you know, they're kind of implying that... Mm. I'm doing things that are illegal that I shouldn't be doing because I think that I'm safe doing them in the UK.
Well, fortunately that they go on. They've actually put this matter behind them.
Is this why they released the press statement?
This was in the press statement to say that we're not actually thinking about this anymore.
So we're going to tell you that we're not thinking about it to show you that we're not thinking about it.
Anyway, I thought the highlight of the talk was that you annotated this as part of your presence. So you sort of got to the end and then you showed this. What did you do to this?
So I got it like full screen, literally like in red pen on their press statement. Every time they wrote blogger, I just like little arrow in, multi-award winning. Bitches across the bottom of the slide.
And could I just say, like, I was standing at the back because I came a little bit late because of my previous talk, but I was standing like three levels deep and the crowd went nuts.
This is the thing that I was worried about, right? It's like, we're at InfoSec, it's like a posh and kind of high level event, and I just got like bitches written across the slide in big letters. But it went down really well, fortunately. It went down
exceptionally well. Now, also while we're there, Pentest Partners offered to do their own independent test.
Yes.
No word from Nomix yet.
Nothing, no. So yeah, so this is kind of the thing, right? They've said, look, you say this happened, you say this didn't happen, yeah. How about you send us one and for free, like we'll settle this one way or the other.
I guess on like just a slightly more serious note, that the reality of it is sometimes these things ship and they've got minor vulnerabilities or they're just majorly insecure, as the case may be here. All of the truth always comes out. You can't cover this stuff up and just stick your fingers in your ears and hope it goes away. And what's going to happen is as soon as someone like Pentest Partners gets their hands on it, they're going to confirm your findings anyway. There's no doubt whatsoever about that. And if this organization doesn't want to provide them with one, it's only going to make them look more stupid, but you know, maybe they've got representation at these big events and some people haven't seen the press and they sell them anyway. I don't know. It's a bizarre thing.
They have a huge stand at CES, you know, like big stand that must have cost big money, and you know, you must get some traction from that, right? People don't go to CES and spend all that money because nothing happens afterwards.
Let's make sure Pentest Partners get a legitimate one that they sell through the mainstream as well.
So do you have viewers in the US? I guess you must.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
So they can literally just go to the website and buy one.
So if you're in the US and you would like to help Pentest Partners do an independent analysis of Nomix, what do they cost?
The base one is $199.
If you'd like to make a $199 donation to a good cause and buy Nomix through mainstream retail channels, send it to Pentest Partners. And in all seriousness, keep Scott out of the loop because the independence is important. We'll connect you with Pentest Partners and we'll get them to do their own independent review. And either they can confirm your findings and Nomix can acknowledge them, or they can say that the UK blogger doesn't know what he's doing. Like, it'll be one or the other, you know?
Yeah, it's got to be.
All right, cool. So whilst we're at InfoSec, so you did your talk in the afternoon. I did a keynote talk after Mikko Hyppinen. You met Mikko, which is cool. Mikko's awesome. Mikko's a great guy. Watch talks by Mikko if you want to see really, really awesome talks. And he is one of the people that's had an influence on the way I do my talks. You know what I like about Mikko? Like, he does these, like, he's funny, but he's serious in a kind of Finnish way as well. And he tells a good story, and he leaves these great kind of dramatic pauses where the message kind of sinks in, and it's just, he's just got a lovely presentation style. He's done some TED Talks before as well, which have been very, very good.
The great one on the viruses, that's a really good one to watch.
Oh, the one where he goes to Pakistan.
Yeah.
So Miko goes to Pakistan to trace back the origins of the original virus, and he finds Armageddon or someone like this.
in their IT office.
It's an amazing thing. If I can find it in time, I'll put in the notes for this as well. Okay, so... Now, I'm just trying to remember the chronology here. So I went and did a bunch of Rona stuff. I spent all of my Thursday from 7:30 in the morning until we were too tired to stay up, meeting Pluralsight customers as well. So we had a nice breakfast. A bunch of people came along. I did a heap of press with some UK folks here. And then you came along as well. We had the Pluralsight dinner, which was cool. And then I think by about 9 o'clock, we were just so shattered that we kind of...
I was literally broken.
So, and of course, you were doing workshops the whole time too. So you did Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday workshops. Yep. So you were nonstop with that.
Them back to back.
This is why we have no idea what even country we're in at the moment. Now then on Friday afternoon, I did 3 Pluralsight courses. So I did 2 with a guy called John Elliott. Now, John is a very interesting guy. He's got a lot of history with PCI. He was very influential there and has also been involved in a lot of payment card stuff. I think he publicly said this, has worked for Visa, for example, in the past. So he and I did 1 play-by-play, this is when we're sort of sitting together talking, on JavaScript Keylogger in payment forms. And in fact, it was a little bit broader than that. He was sort of looking at, this is the history of how data's been stolen from payment forms. So it'd be things like, look, if you got shell on the box and you could log payment for or requests as they were being submitted, you could solve those or you could save those. Companies wanted to try and do payment forms without necessarily having to go through the whole PCI thing. So they use the likes of Stripe now, where they just embed internal, external script, drop it on your page. But then if your box gets hosed or someone runs their own script, they just put listeners on fields and things like that.
Yeah.
But it was good, actually, because it actually drew us into the discussion about things like content security policies as a way of protecting against this. If you have them, you can report as well. Anyway. So that was cool. Now, the next one I did, and I was really, really excited about doing this one because I really wanted to try and cut through a bunch of stuff. Is John is also the Data Protection Officer, which is a DPO for those of you in Europe who are probably a bit more aware of this, for a very, very major European brand. He doesn't say which brand, but it is one that everyone in Europe knows of. And he has spent his life dealing with GDPR in recent times, as many people in legal capacities have here in the EU. So we did a course on what we're learning from GDPR now that it's hit. So when I think back to it, like think back about a year ago, everyone was talking about like the letter of the law and what it's going to mean. And I mean,
everyone was going to prison.
Everyone's going to go to prison. Everyone's going to get fined 20 million euros or 4% of growth annual worldwide turnover, whichever was greater. And back then there was a sort of a lot of speculation about it. But I think what we've seen is as GDPR has come and hit, and we're really only 2 weeks into it, 2 weeks and 1 day, aren't we, as of today? Or no, exactly. It must be about exactly 2 weeks. Anyway, only a couple of weeks. Of course, everyone got hit with floods and floods of things like emails about privacy policies. What I found really, really interesting with the discussion with John, and I'm pushing for this play-by-play to be ready as early as possible because I think it's got higher value early on. He did a very, very good job of disseminating what is compliant, what is not, what fits within scope, what doesn't. And one of the things that I learned from him is he said, look, those GDPR emails really broke down into 2 categories. One of these categories was effectively saying we've changed our privacy policy and our terms and conditions. He said that this is good, this is within scope. He said the other category was effectively people emailing you saying, is it okay to email you? And he said, look, that is well and truly not within the sentiment of what PCI is meant to do. It's not necessary. It could even be a convention of the regulation in some places because you're effectively emailing people for reasons which they didn't really want to be emailed for. Yeah. So that was very interesting. We spoke about things like, you know, how papers are getting blocked, like US papers are getting blocked.
We talked about that.
So that's... I mean, I knew this was happening, but I shared a story only a few days before I came over here. And without realizing it was on the LA Times, and then a whole bunch of people said, well, I can't access this, it's blocked.
Me.
You were one of them. So we had a lot of discussion around why are they doing this? Does this make them quote-unquote compliant? What happens if you're a European and then you use a VPN and you VPN into the US? One of the really interesting things is we looked at, I think it was USA Today, looked at the version of it from the UK, and then we looked at the version of it I VPN'd into the US. And the US version is actually kind of crap, and the one here, it's like, there's no ads. It's so efficient, and it loads so well. But isn't it weird that now, depending on where you are, you either get nothing, because I don't think this is really the sentiment either. It wasn't to say, hey, Europeans, we're just going to lock you out of some systems altogether, or you get a cut-down version. You and I have spoken about this a lot because, of course, we've been thinking about it with Report URI as well. But one of the things that came up after that I shared that LA Times link was multiple people said, well, if it's not GDPR compliant, I don't want to risk going there anyway. Are you sure some of these, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a shame because they're kind of, a website's kind of saying, we can't operate in a way that's like friendly enough to your privacy that we have to just not operate with you. And I don't think that anyone should really be at a state where they have to say that, especially not large brands like that. You know, surely you should be able to function in a capacity that is friendly enough to my privacy to be GDPR compliant. Because it's really not caused us that much of a problem. And I appreciate we had I'm security focused and Report URI was built with that focus. And so we've not really had to do too much. But these businesses can't be that privacy invasive that they can't comply, right? Like, and just say, look, you guys just need to go away because we can't be.
So it was interesting because the video will explain this much better. John has a great way of putting things in terms that people can understand, which frankly I think is always the problem when we try and interpret any regulation. But you're saying, look, a lot of this comes down to things like these sites tend to have ads which target people because it's what ad networks do. And just by virtue of you being, say, a US newspaper, once you put Google, Google AdWords or whatever it is which is going to target advertisements to you, then now you've got targeted content. And it is targeted content at EU data subjects. In fact, it was quite interesting. He said, notice how the regulation never actually talks about EU citizens and residents. Because I'd said this a couple of times, you know, I'd heard from people, look, I'm an EU citizen or resident, I want certain things to happen. So this is not actually the way it works. So,
and the thing as well, it doesn't say that you can't do those things, that you just have to be, the term is like fair and transparent or something. It's not like you must never serve targeted ads, it's just that you have to be transparent about what you're doing.
There are ways of doing it, but,
and that's the thing, you can do it just in the right way.
The context of the course was very much around what are we learning now that's here. And he gave an example where he showed one particular site. I can't remember the one, but it'll be in the video. And you can go and tailor the content in terms of the targeting. This tailoring included the ability to turn off, I kid you not, about 200 different cookies. There are 200 different host names.
Like all the
checkboxes. Yeah. And I'm looking at this going, we can have a very reasonable discussion about why in the world would you ever want to have that much targeting or cookies, whatever it may be. But on the other hand, presenting someone with that is just absolutely ridiculous. How can anyone make a judgment decision based on, and this was the names of organizations.
Yes, literally just company names.
It was crazy. So we spoke a lot about that. Now, the other thing that I did with John is after we did that, he and I did an impromptu video like this because we were in a studio and we had nice lights and things like that about have I been pwned in GDPR. And I've got some really, really useful information from him. Some things were actually a lot easier than what they thought they'd be. I've been really conscious about this and I've been trying to do many things to meet requirements whilst also being conscious that the very nature of Have I Been Pwned is that there is an awful lot of data in there that came from people that never consented. Now, one of the... I don't want to sort of get into too much detail now because I'm going to take what he said and actually share that in video. But one of the things he made the point about is, he said, look, consent is only one of, I think, six different criteria for processing. And what was the term he used? Was
it legitimate interest?
Okay, so legitimate interest was the other one because he said, look, one of the challenges organisations have is what about when they're getting data for, say, threat intelligence purposes? You know, they're looking at different information that might indicate whether the organisation could be put at risk. Some of it might have personal data in there of data subjects as opposed to citizens and residents, etc. So he had really, really useful info on that. And I really want to spend more time with John continuing to flesh things out. It's in some ways, it is a lot easier than what I expected. And I don't really want to say precisely why, only insofar as if I screw it up and someone takes sound bites. You know what people are like on the internet. And actually, that was one of the themes, just in general. We see people on the internet getting so upset about this. So one of the examples was, there was a data breach of a South African company called ViewFinds. And ViewFinds is a service where if you get, say, a traffic ticket whilst you're driving your car in South Africa, you can then go online to this service and see this. And they had a data breach, all the data leaked, about 750,000 records. And a couple of people sort of said either GDPR will fix this or they'll get penalised under GDPR. And I'm going, well, it's a South African service. There are extraterritoriality provisions. But the very nature of the service is that you have to be in South Africa to ever end up in there in the first place. And then people go, yeah, but you could be an EU citizen or resident. And then we get back to John's point again, where he said, well, look, it's not actually about citizens and residents.
I actually say that.
Yeah, so anyway, look, he does a really good job of cutting through. I will try and get Pluralsight to push that as fast as possible, to prioritise it, even over the one you and I did, which we'll talk about in a moment, because I just think the timing's perfect. All right, so what do you and I do? Because you have done your first Pluralsight course now.
Yes, am I a Pluralsight author now or when they publish it?
You're a light author.
Author light.
Pluralsight light.
So yeah, we did our Pluralsight play-by-play, so that was your third of the day. So I wrapped up my training, literally dived on a tube and then ran to the studio to make it on time to then do more speaking. Yeah, so we did modern browser security reporting, right? Mm. I recall that correctly. So essentially just all the cool stuff that you can do with the browser. And when things go wrong, it can tell you, it can fix things on your behalf and tell you. You can get all kinds of feedback if the users see error messages with things like CT especially. So it's just really nice to talk about that. It's like play-by-play format, so kind of high level, but enough information for someone to get to grips with what benefit there is from reporting. And naturally, we kind of had to talk about Report Your Eye, but we kind of also didn't want to. It was more about the actual reporting mechanisms and the JSON payloads and stuff like that. The reason that I'm so interested in... That's the reason that I started Report Your Eye, right?
Yeah.
Because I started Report Your Eye because I thought it was cool, not...
It is cool.
Like, yeah.
I thought it was good because we kind of did an intro of... We have entered an era now where reporting is a thing, where a browser can report automatically for you. And not too long ago, that just simply wasn't a thing, only in very small ways. So then we went and did, if memory serves me, we did CSP, HPKP, Certificate Transparency, CAA. I think maybe we did those the other way around.
Yeah.
And then eventually XSS. So, I mean, XSS is one many people don't know about. There's an auditor built into the browser. And if you're in, say, Chrome and you go to a web page and that web page blocks what it believes is an XSS attack, you can actually get it to report that back to you. And then you can use a service like Report Your Eye to actually save that report and then come back and look at it later on. So you can see if there have been potential XSS attempts against your website.
And you get the payload as well. So you actually get the attack payload, which is really nice, because if someone is trying to find, and this is more reflected XSS, if someone is like testing this and they trip the auditor, you get a copy of their payload, which is like, oh, thank you very much.
Now, you also got a bit sweary in that.
No, come on. I didn't think we were going to go there. He went there.
I think I'll just link through to the video. So I had to stop Scott because he said something inappropriate.
No. So we're in the middle of recording. I'm just talking normally like I am now. And Troy's like, whoa, 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 cut. Like, freaking out. And I'm like, dude, what? Like, you know, is the building on fire? What's going on?
I'll link to the video. You can make up your own mind as to whether Scott was a bit sweary.
I did. Or
if there was something else.
Twitter poll. It's the only way.
Anyway, now, while we're talking about Report URI, we store all of our Report URI data in Microsoft GitHub. should we talk about that?
Well, you've started now. You pulled the thread. We need to unravel it.
Okay, so, I mean, obviously I've got a bit of a Microsoft allegiance, for want of a better term. You're a bit more independent. How do you feel about it?
I mean, we haven't seen any change yet. I'm not...
Yeah, but it's only been like a few days.
Exactly, yeah, but people are already losing their mind and we haven't seen any change yet and it has only been a few days.
Do you think there'll be any change?
I don't think so in the short term. Personally, I don't know. Like, a lot of the worry with Microsoft is kind of like long-standing, and if you look more recently, I think that they have given a lot of the right indications. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt before I start losing my mind on the Twitters, which a lot of people seem to be refraining from doing.
As in, there are a lot of people losing their minds.
Yeah. And I don't know. Let's just see what they do with it.
It's. I think it's a fair point, and this is sort of the one common theme, is that they seem to... There seem to be concerns that are largely based on the Microsoft of old. So, you know, people refer back to some of the stuff that Ballmer said, which is just... Yeah, just doesn't fly today. But, you know, Ballmer also said iPhones would never take off. And, yeah, maybe not such a good call there. How's that Windows phone going, guys? So, you know...
Can you say that if you work for them?
Independent experts. I think very pragmatically, one of the things that stands out for me is Microsoft is now the largest contributor to open source based on the number of people within the organization. Like, they have gone really, really full on into open source. A lot of it's due to people like Scott Hanselman as well, who've really, really pushed for it. And he's, you know, he went in there wanting to make a big difference that way. So, you know, large parts of .NET Framework are open source. A lot of what they're doing is open source. A huge amount of Microsoft documentation is based on GitHub. You know, you can literally go and make pull requests if you want to change things in documentation. So they've really heavily invested in it. I reckon the really interesting bits will be what happens when we get to, let's say, controversial repositories. So what happens when we get to something Chinese government doesn't like? Because we've been there, right? There's been stuff in GitHub that Chinese government allegedly has not liked very much.
They're trying to DDoS it down.
So it sounds like GitHub is intended to run very independently. Nat Friedman's been appointed CEO, and people seem to have a lot of respect for him, which would be really cool. So hopefully we'll meet up with him someday, sooner or later. But he seems to have a lot of love. So that would be very good. I guess the other problem is, one of the tweets I saw, which I thought was quite insightful, is someone said something along the lines of, you know, what do we want as developers? We want source control repositories, we want it highly available, and we want it free, and we want it to keep surviving. And it's kind of like GitHub was losing a huge amount of money, so clearly something had to change. I don't know if, would people have been happier if it was Oracle?
Oh, gosh. Sorry, can we edit that part out? Maybe I shouldn't react so well.
Maybe more realistically, Amazon or someone like that. Would we have been any happier if it's Amazon?
It had to be a massive player. And I think there would have been people that reacted in the same way, like you say. Whichever massive player it was, it would have been a different crowd of equally angry people.
Yeah, there would have been like some controversy one way or the other. All right, speaking of controversy, one last thing before we wrap up, because then we're going to go and find some decent beer.
I don't know what the script... I don't know what's coming.
No, you don't, but that's good, because I'll get organic sort of thoughts from you. 1Password 7 for Windows shipped. I think it was last week, and I updated it on all my things. And one of the things I noticed is that it's now got Windows Hello integration. So Windows Hello is effectively the biometric implementation. It can do either biometric with webcam, or it can do the finger thumbprint thing. And I made the comment that I think I was sitting in the airport lounge in Dubai on the way over here, and I wanted to get into my 1Password. And I was able to log onto my laptop with my thumbprint and open my 1Password with my thumbprint, with people all around me and cameras and things like this, and I was saying, hey, isn't it great that I don't need to enter a master password or anything like this? Now, multiple people made comments about the fact that this was really risky. And I'll give you an example. So someone sort of said to me, well, what if someone lifts your print from something really shiny? We have made this comment. Like, we're handing this around to all these security people that look at those clean prints. What if someone manages to lift your print and then logs onto your machine? And
there's like a missing middle step there, right? Of like lifting it and then successfully
turning it into something which will actually work against the fingerprint reader. And the problem is, people pull stories from days gone by where it's like some bloke got a bunch of gummy bears, melted them down, and then put them in a mold like James Bond style and turned into a print. But there are a couple of really important things there. So first of all, you've got to get a really clean print, which you could probably get off something like this or a glass. Second of all, you've actually got to turn it into something workable. But thirdly, you've also got to have access to the device. Yeah. This is not like a pin. And in fact, this was one of the points I made. You know, if, a lot of the time people are saying, oh, you should use pins. Pins or passwords, well, you know, we have problems there because then they tend to be usable from remote locations as well. But I kind of said to someone, like, the way that someone would have to, because they were saying, you know, what happens if you go to sleep on the airplane and they get it? And I had the laptop in the little thing.
I would totally sit there and let them do that, by the way. You know, pick up your laptop and start trying to...
But you'd also have to make, like, the gummy bear print on the airplane. Can you imagine being there on the airplane with, like, a little stove melting down gummy bears?
Well, you could just get your laptop out of your bag and take up your sleeping hand and open your laptop.
Well, imagine if I woke up in the middle of the night, some bloke's leaned over me, having taken the laptop from the little cupboard thing next to me, and then he's got my... Assuming it's a him, it could be a her, I don't know. That'd be more interesting.
A bad person.
Anyway... Some bad person, and they got my thumb, and they're trying to put it on my laptop. But they've got to boot it up, and then they've got to log on, and then they've got to go
to come back for one password.
You just...
Okay, yeah.
It's that versus I can enter my password without doing a Snowden with the blanket over my head. You know, like, it's just... It just seems to me people lose their mind with that. I'm trying to remember why I wrote this note. I've written this note that said, "Or police could steal my Bitcoin."
Better notes to self next time.
I think that the memory of it was people saying, "Like the cops could get your thumbprint and log onto your machine and then steal your Bitcoin." And I'm like, if the cops are corrupt and they're going to steal things from you, why don't they just ask you for your password? And if you don't give it to them, they just keep beating you with a baton until you give it to them. Like, it's... Once you're going down the path of the cops are corrupt and they're going to steal things to your detriment, I am envisaging it's not a great leap to the point where they put
apply
you
pressure.
Under duress. Yeah. And ask you for the pin. Anyway. All right. So, look, let's start wrapping it up because that has been a heap of stuff. But this week's sponsor has been Gold Security. They've been a long-term sponsor. Having folks like Gold Security allows me to come and do stuff like this. And, you know, to be clear, things like conference talks, like InfoSec, we don't get paid for that.
Many people miss that, right?
Yeah. Many people miss that. You know, what we normally get is the flights and accommodation. And even things like you and I both got to do 2 conference talks at NDC this week. We don't get paid to do conference talks. You get to meet awesome people. You get to expand your exposure. And having sponsors like Gold Security actually pay money whilst I'm blogging and, you know, vlogging and all the rest of it makes a really big difference. So I think we're going to go and find some beer. We're going to go and find that absolutely epic American barbecue spot as well. Way down south.
Way down south, yes. If you're ever
in Oslo, go to it. We only found it when we were here in January, and we've been here many, many times before.
Yeah.
And it was like, wow, this place is just amazing. So we're going to go back there. Do you want to do this with me again at the end of this week? Maybe we'll try and get out earlier.
Yeah, so we're here. Yeah, well, we're
supposed to be here.
Saturday, right?
Yeah, we'll see us then. Cool. All right, well, thank you very much, everyone, for watching. I hope you've enjoyed this. It's been a little bit different to usual, but hopefully that gives you some insight on what this has been about. We're super, super excited about it. And thank you for everyone who voted as well, because these ones took votes. And for people that have been using Report URI too. That's awesome. Thanks, guys.
Cheers.
See you later.